I'll just rant for like an hour. And Roko will be drunk. That's how it'll work. He'll just swear. He'll just throw out drunken profanity and talk about sausage. Hey there, welcome to the 86th episode of the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast. You just listened to the song Choose My Love from the anime Kampfer für die Liebe by the artist Minami Kuribayashi. And here at the Anime Addicts Anonymous podcast, our sole mission is to make your addiction to anime worse.
Much worse.
We hope that we can accomplish that throughout the evening. But we're glad that you joined us. You can find us at www.aaapodcast.com. That's three A's. You can also find us on iTunes. And if you like us, please leave a review for us. It helps people find us on iTunes and bumps us up on their list. Also, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/AnimeAddictsAnonymousPodcast. We also have the aaanetwork.org, which is a network that has 20 different podcasts, including Gundam, Anime World Order, Method to Madness, and many more that are awesome and will surely fill your needs for all of your podcast listening.
You know, for when the 6 days in between when we release episodes.
Right, naturally. Also, we are on the Ustream every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time live. So, come join us.
With video.
Indeed.
And stuff.
You guys can all see what we look like.
Yeah.
But no one cares what I look like, really. It's just about Chiaki.
Aww, people care about you, Mitsugi.
Maybe. I'm not convinced.
Nah.
Anyway, so, we have 8 new forum members this week.
8.
8. It's a pretty good number.
Yeah.
Tombo91, Skyline, Booty Kaustud 79, thank you for picking a difficult name to pronounce, Pooji, Mad Bull, Faust 711, The Burning Giraffe, and DK Black.
The Burning Giraffe is so my name of the week. Please don't be a spammer. I don't want to have to block that name. I hope you're
funny.
A real person.
I picture like this giraffe just running through a field on fire.
When a giraffe eats a sandwich, a little goes a long way.
I grumble at your Owl City jokes.
Owl City, get to see them in concert.
Anyway, so we also had trivia this week.
Yes.
The trivia question was The Cat Returns.
Nyang, nyang.
So, if you haven't seen The Cat Returns, I'm shocked.
I left a little bit of the cat's mouth in the left-hand corner. That was my hint to you. I always try to leave a little hint.
I don't know. It seemed like a pretty easy question to me, but despite that, only 7 people got it right. And the 7 people are Lil Too Nutty, Faust 711, Lego Connect, Neko-chan, Mokuren, Tyvoon, and Brave Genghis. The winner, however, was Faust 711, so congratulations to you, sir. You are the winner for this
week. Wow, new person wins trivia? That's a nice welcome present.
Yeah.
Seems like we plan it, but it's random.
Yeah, it is random, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Also, we have some birthdays. Would you like to handle the birthdays for me?
Sure. A very happy birthday goes out to, and some of these are belated because we missed them in a previous episode, Eden Anarchy, Goben Kun's mob.
Wow.
Goben Kun's mob. Prixer. Raid 233. Jets. Aw, Jet. Fawn Wei Weipe. Katharina. Diesel Joe 001. And aw, Grim Reaper Hay.
You know, it's fitting that Jekt have a birthday today, considering that I'm playing the Final Fantasy X Scenery of Spira song.
Aww.
Somewhere in the Scenery of Spira, there is a Jekt.
There is a Jekt.
Even if he is only a memory.
I know. Happy birthday to all of you. Otanjobi omereto.
Very nice.
Yes, of course.
Also, we have a mailbag question. Actually, are we going to do both questions?
We'll do both questions. So we're starting...
Let me say first, this is the almighty mailbag.
It's an almighty anime mailbag. A-A-A mailbag.
Okay. All right. I think there is the button on the top page of the website, right? Correct?
Yes, there on the top page of the website, on the top bar, there's a button for the mailbag. And we've actually had a question submitted via the button. Yay, button! But what I've kind of realized is we have a similar section on the forums. So, generally speaking, in my mind, the forums was for things that maybe people would want to discuss or that you'd want multiple answers on. So, forum would be for forums, and then the mailbag would be for the show. But I realized that my logic doesn't always apply to the world. So, what I'm thinking is that we're going to change the questions for the forums into kind of a mailbaggy type thing. So if you want us to answer it on the show, make sure you let us know on the forums. Or if you don't join the forums or just want to use the mailbag anyway, you can send it to us via mailbag.
That sounds good.
Oh, okay.
By all means.
So the first question we had, these two questions were both put on the forums, and one of them was submitted by Ravy Dave. Via our mailbag, hence the start of this new section. Yay, mailbag questions. And he asked, what I want to know, he has questions about our specs. What I want to know is what computer is it? Just the model, don't need your specifications. Also, what OS are you running and the browser you're using for the internet? It would be cool to know how AA Podcast site was made and how the forums are run, if you don't mind. And this kind of goes into a question that Tomoki asked on the forums. Which is, if possible, could you explain to me in detail the basics needed, i.e. startup costs, including equipment, as well as recommendations for mic mixers, etc., legal procedures, and whatnot. Essentially, everything you would recommend to start a decent podcast. So,
this is a little bit of a difficult question for me, because the computer doesn't really have a model number or anything like that, as you say. I built the computer. I mean, not that it's that hard to build a PC. It's got about 7 pieces. But I know you said you don't really care what the specs are, but I mean, I don't really know how else to tell you what computer it is unless I tell you the specs of it, because...
Yeah, well, I think he was asking not for the specifications because he could just look up the model, but since he can't...
I mean, it's just a jumble of parts, you know? And since this is the almighty mailbag, I'm playing Mozart's Requiem in the background. Not that one.
Oh.
It's JCPA right now. Anyway, but the processor is, I'll make this quick because I'm sure it's boring technobabble. The processor is an AMD Athlon quad processor, quad core, 2.6 gigahertz. It's got 4 gigabytes of RAM, 4 gigabytes of RAM. It's like a half terabyte hard drive with a gigabyte video card.
Awesome.
So, I don't know.
You built it for Final Fantasy 13, and then it became the podcast computer.
14.
That sucked.
It's pretty much a budget build PC. I mean, if you buy your own PC and build it yourself, you can build a computer just like this one for about $600.
As far as internet browsing and the website kind of questions, I use Firefox. I think that one has both Firefox and IE, and we just switch back and forth, but I use Firefox. I think it's a much better browser. That's what I built the site in, and I think the site looks like crap in IE.
It does look like crap.
It looks
compared to Firefox.
Compared to Firefox, yeah. I mean, it's not like that bad, but like if you install Firefox and you look at it in Firefox compared to IE, it's so much better.
Well, it's kind of a shame because the site looks amazing on Firefox, so. But I think like half the people that come to the site still use Internet Explorer.
But
I can't understand that.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Old habits die hard. But as far as how it was made and how the forums are run, I don't know what you're looking for on this. The forums are, of course, PHP Code. They're run by the base PHPBB forum, like, skeleton as its general outlook. And the website, when we redid it for PHP Ease and content management system Ease, we went with a WordPress site, which I will confess. But my goal was to make it not look like a WordPress site, which I think I succeeded.
Yeah.
And then as far as Tomoki's question, kind of going into that now, the details and the basics needed as far as starting a podcast, for it to start a decent podcast, just starting with website stuff, you're going to need to buy a domain name, because I highly recommend you start out with one domain name. That way you don't change later. It's not like your podcast name .blogspot.com, and then later on when you get bigger or do it for a while and you want a domain name, you're not like, oh, our domain is changing. So you'll need a domain name, which is a yearly fee.
Don't we have an episode on this? Like two of them?
No, I don't think so.
Are you sure?
On starting a podcast? No, I don't think we ever did it. Did we? Okay. So you'll need a domain name, you'll need a hosting service, server space, depending on what you go with. Mitsugi is the equipment man, so he can give the rundown on that.
Well, we have the computer, which I already explained, and we have about 1,000 laptops, except you don't really need 1,000 laptops. You know, we typically have a Skype caller calling in through one laptop, normally Chiaki's, and we'll have Kimiko later calling in for the interview with Terry and Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
And then we technically have the sound effects coming in through another laptop. So if you want to do it the way that we have it, you need three computers.
Mm-hmm.
Most studios that I know of have multiple computers, so it's pretty normal. We have two mics. They're CL2 pencil condensers from Samson. They're about $300 for the pair. It doesn't come with the stands or the cables. So, but for $300, you can get all that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the mixer's like $100. I mean,
the mixer's good for, of course, adjusting levels, because the microphones sound nicer normally than Skype, so you need to bring Skype up and bring the microphones down, and by having it on different channels, you can do that. We have the webcam, which is like a $80 Logitech webcam. I got it when I went to Japan, so I didn't buy it specifically for the show, but we have other wire hookups, of course, from the computers, for phones and stuff. The software which we edit on is Adobe. Which I had, again, but it's expensive software if you were buying it from scratch.
As hell.
Yeah, it's like $500, I think, for
the bare bones.
For the bare bones. Then, of course, we have, you know, the monthly trivia prizes, the monthly hosting fees, which are about $10. Like I said, the yearly domain renewal fee. And then, of course, there's just the other things that go into podcasting, like the prep work, the news editing, setting up the room, the feed, recording, the post-production, watching the anime itself, networking, website updating, and probably other things that I'm forgetting, but also go into it. And that's assuming we don't have a con to go to, because yeah, that's like more money and time added onto it.
Marketing or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you do it like us. I think we tend to put more effort in than some. Not really sure.
Yeah. I don't know.
But you can also get you could also get by with Audacity and a $50 webcam, which costs you $50.
Yeah.
Because Audacity is free, but it's very limited. Anyway, so for today's show, I hope that was an adequate mailbag for you.
Thank you for it. I like mailbags.
Yes, please leave more mailbags and hopefully maybe a couple anime-related ones. You know, now that you know what our show requirements are or whatever. So for today's show, we have Terry and J. Michael Tatum and Terry Doty are going to call into the line with Kimiko in about 2 minutes, and we're going to have an interview with them. They are Funimation voice actors and directors, etc., and they've done a lot of great shows and a lot of great work. So I hope you guys all enjoy hearing them, and this kind of rounds out our voice actor run. You know, this is third and fourth voice actors we've had in the past month. So, you know, along with Brett Weaver and, of course, Steve Bloom last week. So, and then we're going to come back after a news break, and I'm going to review Kari Kano, or His and Her Circumstances, and Chiaki is going to review an anime, or I believe it's an OVA, called Cat Soup,
yeah,
which was requested, I imagine, a long time ago by LaLucia Gami.
Mm-hmm.
So that make one little small chip off the giant list of 140 animes that have been requested that will never get all the way through in my lifetime. So I'm going to call up Kimiko and we're going to get this interview started. So,
yay, Kimiko.
All right, so we have Terry Doty and J. Michael Tatum on the line. They are Funimation voice actors and directors, script writers, and also podcasters. So, will you please introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Terry Doty. What's going on? They got it right. I'm a voice actor, director, sometimes writer, and podcaster for That Anime Show. And with me as always is...
I'm J. Michael Tatum's stand-in. I sound a lot like him, so I figured, you know, he can go out and have fun tonight and have a party or something, so I'm getting paid good money to be here. Hi! No, it's really me. I do all that stuff too. It's fun.
Well, we'd hope it was fun. Otherwise, why would you be doing it, yeah?
Exactly.
Very true.
But we're really glad you guys are joining us this evening, so thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, no problem. We've had to reschedule a couple of times, I know. So, yay, we're finally doing it. Yay!
Oh, that's not a problem at all. And since you guys are since we're both, I guess, fellow podcasters, as you could say, I want to start off by asking a question about That Anime Show, just so you guys can kind of, you know, plug it a little bit and, you know, let the listeners know how to find your show and what it's all about. But, So what is That Anime Show? And I'm kind of curious, I mean, we have our own motivation and inspiration for how we decided that we wanted to do our show. But I was kind of curious about that for your show and how you came up with the idea and the inspiration for it.
Well, the way it came about is, I guess, shortly after becoming friends, it became quite clear when it was more than just me and Tatum in the room that we liked to kind of command the room, especially Tatum or Michael.
No one ever knows. I love it.
See, I always call you Tatum. But yeah. I have a degree in radio, television, broadcasting, and I originally went to school to do radio, and then shortly after starting the program, they were like, well, radio is kind of a dying art form, so you might want to start learning about film or change majors. I'm married a sound engineer, so that kind of opened up being able to, you know, getting into studying, researching podcasts and stuff like that. And then we originally started doing That Anime Show through an internet streaming service, and that's what kind of prompted us to go ahead and do it, even though we've been kind of talking about maybe doing something. We didn't know what we were going to do. And then that service, we wanted to just do it, just to say, if it sucks, at least we can say we did it. And couple of shows in, we're like, we want to keep doing it, but we want to do it on our own terms, and we want to be able to cut. So, because FCC, I'm sure you know, has very strict regulations. That Anime Show is really just pretty much just the way me and Tatum talk normally, with an unfortunate guest every time we do it. And then Stephen Hoff, who's the engineer and also the moderator of our chat room, he records it, mixes the show, and uploads it. That Anime Show, the name of it, the internet streaming service, came up with it. She didn't know what to call us. What's your name? And Tatum and I were like, we don't know. But now we'll call it That Anime Show.
Also,
and we both looked at each other like, ooh, that's cool. We liked that.
She was spelled anime, but yeah.
Yeah, it is kind of catchy because you're not just an anime show, you were That Anime Show, so it works out.
Exactly, yeah. we haven't hung out together that much, and we're already simpatico.
When we're not finishing each other's sentences, we're speaking in unison. So it happens a lot. And I really like the idea of doing this show because I'm really attracted to the idea of getting to interview a lot of these people who Terry and I get to work with up at the studio and have gotten to know. And we love to give them a chance to kind of get in and sort of be themselves and let their hair down and also promote other things they may be working on that are not anime related. Like a lot of these people are involved in film and theater or they're interested or, you know, into things that are really fascinating. And so we love to just let them come on and, you know, let them be themselves. And I don't know that they're necessarily comfortable around us, but it's, it's almost like an archival interview thing. I love to hear their stories, and I love to give them the chance to tell us more about themselves than we typically get to know in another setting. So it's kind of fun. I'm really attracted to that aspect of the show. So when Terry came to me and said, "Hey, do you want to do this?" I was like, "Yes, we'll totally do this. We can cut."
And I think one thing that kind of sets us apart from not necessarily anime-related podcasts, which, by the way, we have heard a few of your shows. We really like that. The first one we listened to was Joel McDonald.
Oh, Joel McDonald.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we love our Joel.
Yes, we do.
He's great. He was fantastic to talk to.
He was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he had nothing but good things to say about it. So we're like, okay, well, if they ask us, well, I guess we'll do it.
All right, we'll have to thank him.
I think one thing that we bring to it is we are very, very, very dedicated to making sure that the fans feel that they're involved.
Right.
So the fans get to submit questions, and a lot of the questions that are asked are fan questions. They're not our questions.
I remember
we've
that.
A lot of We've met a lot of really amazing people doing that just at conventions. They're like, "You answered my question." It's crazy.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, so that anime show originally was just downloaded. You could just download it from our website. But then the guys from the Unofficial One Piece podcast and the Full Metal podcast, Zach and Steve, Ed and Manny and Jason, they really helped us out and updated our website, gave us a new website, and put us on iTunes. So now we're available on iTunes as well as our website.
Oh, so now you're connected.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the power of iTunes. So,
I know, it's insane.
Speaking of your website, what is your, just so for the people can find you, what is your web address so people can come and check you out?
www.thatanimeshow.com.
There we go.
Yeah, and we also have a Facebook page, and we're always cruising it, so yeah.
Awesome. Segueing over to another topic in this wonderful interview, what exactly is your motivation for entering the anime industry itself? You know, it's directors, voice actors, you know, what inspired you to make that career path?
I guess I'll go first on this one. I was actually tricked into it.
Oh, no.
No, in a good way. I was approached by someone who really, really wanted me to audition, and I should backtrack and say that I wanted to be an actor very badly when I was young because I had just always loved being on stage or what have you, really, really loved it. But as I grew older and the idea of making a living in any kind of acting sort of, it really daunted me, so I gave up on it. It was a dream that was long dead by the time I was in my late 20s, and then Christopher Bevan, the director up at Funimation, also a voice actor and a writer, just happened to be a good friend of mine. We were both sort of comic book nerds together. And I had never, ever had any thought about coming into the booth and auditioning or doing anything like that. As I said, I'd kind of given up on any dream of being an actor years before. But he just sort of approached me one day out of the blue and asked if I'd come into audition for a part he had in mind for me. And he actually had to wear me down to get me to come in because I didn't want to. I was really frightened of the idea. I thought I would be terrible. And kept coming up with the lamest excuses why I couldn't come in. So he hounded me for like 2 weeks. And then I finally came in just to just to get him off my back, convinced that I would be horrible and that he would see that he'd made a mistake and that he would leave me alone. So I came in just fully expecting to vomit, and it was like a four-hour-long audition, very intense. I learned all these, I learned mic technique and how to read a dub script all in an afternoon, thinking to myself, wow, this is really crazy intense.
Oh, man.
And when it was over with, I thought, see, what did I tell you? I suck. And I said, but just as an aside, how do you people get anything done if it takes you 4 hours to audition every single person? He's like, oh, no. The audition was only 10 minutes. You want it? We've actually been spending the rest of this time recording the first 6 episodes. So you're now an actor. Here. Sign here and come next Sunday. I kind of got tricked into it, and then one thing led to another, and I started getting more work, and then I was approached about directing and then writing, and by that time I was kind of established enough that I thought, oh, why not? And then I started just making my living doing that. So I had a completely different career. I'd never, ever really given any serious thought to approaching the entertainment industry really from any angle before. It just kind of came my way. So I'm one of those lucky people that just, I never hit to sort of drop into my lap. I feel kind of guilty about that, to be perfectly honest with you. But I'm very glad I let Bevins talk me into it. Very, very glad, because it's been a blast. Had I known that this career was an option years ago, I would have tried to get into it much earlier than I did. But, I'm just not, I wasn't a very ambitious person. Things have to sort of find me, or I'm just not interested.
What role was it that they tricked you into doing, if I may ask?
It was the role of Rikichi in Samurai 7.
No way.
Yeah, very, very first thing I ever did.
Awesome.
And they weren't going to take no for an answer.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Seven doesn't take no.
No, he does not.
I guess we all kind of came into it differently, especially if, friends of ours that are also anime voice actors. It's definitely a different type of beast, but I started out doing drama in freshman year of high school because I didn't have a drama program in junior high, and I always moved around, so I never really thought about it. But I really got into the technical aspect of it, stage management and stuff like that, and I'm like, maybe I could do that forever. And then I realized I kind of want to be on stage. Maybe I'm just that big of an attention whore. Let me see. I was going to major in theater arts, but I just started falling in love with directing and film. So I actually dropped being a theater arts major and went to radio, television, film, and kind of gave up acting because my mom had convinced me that I was never going to make a career out of it. Eventually, she just wears you down. But, so I gave up on that, and then as I was about to finish my degree, I got called in by Funimation randomly, knowing no one there other than my husband and Joel McDonald. And I didn't know Joel McDonald yet. Joel McDonald's the one that called me in. He just went off of my husband's recommendation and knowing my theater background and called me in to do some bits for Tsubasa, the Reservoir Chronicles. I'm like, okay, I guess Woman A will do. Yeah, I'll do that. And it turns out Woman A came back in 2 episodes. I knew several people there, like Gino Palencia, who's Brina Palencia's brother. I've known Gino for years, and Gino worked there, and Gino's the one that kind of had me, so I heard you thinking about directing. I'm like, nobody said that. Nobody said that. But now that you said that, I'm interested.
Yes.
So before I graduated, I had to do an internship, and I didn't want to, be a gopher at NBC or, shoot football games or anything like that. So I kind of harassed the powers that be at Funimation until they allowed me to do my internship there. And it turns out that Christopher Bevins went to the same college that I did, and we knew a lot of the same people. Hmm. So I sat in with Bevins and learned how to direct. and learned line producing, mix engineering, voice acting, 4 months. For 4 months under Chris Bevins, and when I graduated, Bevins offered me a job. So
that's like the coolest internship ever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I got to, you know, that's how I met Eric Vail. Like, I met him while I was interning. I watched him record Sanji and kind of fell in love with Eric Vail. But as you do. And, yeah.
And that's how we met, too. Because
you
didn't see a lot while I was directing Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah. You even let me get into the booth.
Yes, I put you in the booth then. Oh, those were happy days.
That's how Tatum and I met. I was interning, and I sat in afternoons. I sat in while he was directing Romeo and Juliet. So it's, you know, and now here I am, and now I'm doing a podcast about anime. I just never thought about it. But I really enjoyed doing what we do. It is kind of odd to explain it to friends that, you know, are bankers and, lawyers. They're like, so what do you do? I'm like, well, have you ever seen One Piece? Like, no. Then it doesn't matter.
It's okay. Your jobs are substantially more awesome.
Yeah.
It's much more fun to explain it to friends who are like, you know, bag checkers or whatever at supermarkets, because then they think it's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, no.
So.
Yes, I'm a bad person. Let's just get that out of the way right now.
Nobody was arguing that.
So you guys...
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny how things work out, isn't it?
Yeah. You guys have already kind of shared, you know, interesting stories just now with us, but our next question specifically was one that we also asked Brett Weaver just a couple weeks ago, and he shared a really funny story with us about Spike Spencer and how they were working on... Martian successor Nadesco, and so we wanted to, and we enjoyed his answer so much that we wanted to ask you the same question, if you guys had any funny stories from a project that you'd been working on in the past.
Of course.
Oh yeah.
Every day.
Oh yeah. I don't know, I really enjoy working with Tatum because it's never dull, but I mean, he's never, you know, I really started working with Tatum, it was as an intern, and then we were both working under the same line producer, and, you know, my first thing officially directing, I was sharing with him. We both directed some episodes of Big Windup.
I love that show.
I'm like, this is the home run. And
Terry was final up. What's going on here? I don't know a thing about baseball.
It was the shower scene. So.
Okay, I was thinking this was maybe part of the game. I didn't know.
Did you guys find yourselves watching baseball on TV or anything to get the gist of it?
I will say that Big Windup moves about the pace of a normal game.
I watched my oldest nephew rather is a baseball fanatic, and he's on like three teams right now. It's crazy. So I found myself going through a lot of his games and asking like very pointed questions about, okay, now that thing you did when you ran from one place to another, what is that called? Like it's really funny. He's like 12 years old and looking at me like I have an idiot, but yeah, it was really funny. So it was really, in a way, my family was able to help me do research for a show.
No, it was all about Joel McDonald, because Joel McDonald's a huge baseball fan, and he wrote a lot of Big Windup. But, you know, to go from being, you know, kind of partners, like directing partners, to him actually directing you is different, because it's like, and then to have him direct you on a show like Rin, Daughters of Mnemosyne.
Oh, goodness.
Which is that's how it's pronounced. I know there's been some debate, but it's Mnemosyne. It's based on Greek mythology. But, you know, I don't have a lot of lines. I have a lot of reactions. But having, you know, one of your best friends by this point, you know, direct you in not only a sex scene, but a sex scene with another one of his very good friends. It got to where he's like, okay, so we're going to come in for this, and I just want to tell you right now that I love you, and you're like my little sister, but I'm not going to listen to this.
So it better be good.
I'm going to trust the engineer. The engineer's like, yeah, that's good.
Oh, boy.
Just Joe Tompkins. We love to give him crap about that. Oh, yeah. But he had Jamie Markey because the first love scene that Jamie Markey and I have, we're she's not really into it, but my character really doesn't care. an episode later, 20 years later, which is one thing I really love about Rin, is that it's about immortals, but the years actually jump, which you rarely see from episode to episode. And it went from, it went 20 years later, and eventually, they're lovers.
Uh-huh.
And Jamie, I recorded first the first time, and Jamie recorded first the second time, and she left me what we call a bomb of us making sweet, sweet loving, but she was not into it at all. So she's all like, sure, okay.
No.
In my defense, it was Jamie Markey's idea. I just fully supported it, but it was not mine. I did not cook this game up.
So,
but
yeah.
It was funny to watch Terry go into the booth, be all nervous for this big scene, and then the moment she hears Jamie, she just drops to the floor and just starts dying of laughter. And I'm like, oh, good. So we've done. So we've gotten that out of our system.
Yeah, I've never been bombed before. And to this day, Jamie Markey does not call me Terry or Miss Doty. She calls me lover. So.
Nice.
But well, he's like,
very nice.
Yeah, but I'm sure we could think of tons more, but I guess if you have a particular show in mind or anything like that, but we could go on. I mean, you've listened to the podcast, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. But in addition to being, the voices of a bunch of different characters, you guys are both ADR directors, too. So what exactly, if you could give us a little bit more details, is the role of an ADR director? Like, what kind of responsibilities does it really carry?
ADR director, and I like this answer that someone else has given before. But ADR, as I understand it, stands for Automated Dialogue Replacement, and I don't like that term. I mean, that's what the term is. I mean, it's what we call ourselves because there really isn't another word. But I'm a big believer that there's nothing really automated about it. With the director, it's like directing anything. Except your focus is on the vocal performances, because as sub-directors, you have no say so in terms of what's going on visually or things like that. So it's freeing in a way, because as a director, then you have only this one thing to focus on. You can really just funnel all of your energy into that and make sure that the dub sounds as incredible as it possibly can. And so it's really interesting. But the director's primary job is, with any kind of directing job, is to essentially be the decider, I guess. I'm using that phrase. But, being the person that the actors and the writers and everyone else sort of depend on to give the show its sort of central vision and to be the anchor for everyone else. And in dub directing in particular, I find that a good director's job is, because the actors have to record in isolation from each other, they don't get to play off each other organically like you do on stage or on film.
Oh, yeah.
We often record people weeks apart, and so you really have to be, the director has to, in a very abstract way, be the rest of the cast for the person who happens to be in the booth recording that particular session. And so it's interesting. I think a director has to wear a lot of hats, and the best directors are actors. And I don't say that that only actors make the directors. I mean, this kind of directing is, in a sense, a performance, and should be treated as such, because you have to sort of tailor your approach to the strengths and weaknesses of the person that you've got in front of you on a given day, so you can make sure to get the best performance out of them, and that you inspire confidence in them. So, yeah, I mean, directing is just that, and that's really kind of a very general overview of what a director does, but I think it's also, the most important thing a director does. So,
all of that loveliness. We also, a lot of technical aspects are into it. A director is nothing if not dependent on an ADR engineer. ADR engineers work with the directors, and they work like, other than the research mode, which is what we go through before we start the audition process, if there is an audition process, sometimes, you know, if it's a movie or sometimes a lot of people don't remember that we do live acts as well, which are much more free, like, have much more freedom because it doesn't matter. The flats will never match.
True that.
Ever, as good as you are. But, you know, research mode, so your job at that point as an ADR director is to know the most about anything regarding the show. And it's too a nauseating point with me to the point where it's like, no, I know, and I read the manga, and da-da-da. I also read the side story, I ran the fanfic, you know, I've read everything. But a lot of people don't do that. But, I mean, really, because I kind of, what I think I've noticed a lot with Tatum's work is both he and I kind of fall in love with the shows that we work on. You know, you can look at a show, and I think Baka and Tess, Summon the Beast, which is coming out next month, or no, now it's coming out in July, it was one of those shows I saw the first couple minutes, I'm like, I don't know, this might be one of those shows that I just never fall in love with, and then 5 minutes later, I'm like, I love this show.
Yep.
But it's fantastic, and I can't wait to watch it. After that, we do the audition process, which can take anywhere from 3 days to a couple of weeks, of anywhere from casting to actually casting and booking people. And the line producer also gives their say, which is the director's boss, or the voice director's boss. And then we record the show, and like Tatum was saying, with each actor, it's a different approach with each actor. You can't direct one actor the same way you would direct another. Like Josh Greeley, I know that I have to have, like, a lot of energy because he wants to have fun, and he wants you to have fun, and he maybe wants to tear apart your booth while doing it.
Of course.
Okay, then on Baka, we recorded, like, that was almost 100 hours of recording just for Akihisa Yoshi. So it's
wow.
A little crazy. After that, after the recording process is done, the engineer and the director look over everything and submit it to the line producer, and the line producer tells you whether or not you're going to maybe need to change this read, call this person in again, have them do this line differently, that was short, stuff like that. And then it gets mixed, and then the director's job is done until, you know, you can gloat about it when it's officially announced. So, yeah, you know, Tatum went through the nice philosophical stuff, and I'm like, here's all the technical crap. But, yeah.
We like the technical crap.
I love it. I love it. It's great. And, you know, each show is different. Each show requires a different directing style, all that loveliness. Hada.
I feel like I've learned so much about dubbing an anime.
Seriously.
Actually, you already answered. You kind of answered two questions in one, because our next question was going to be how many people were involved in the process, but I think you covered that pretty well.
Oh, yeah, there are a lot of people. Like, director is one out of, I'd say, at least 20 people that touches the show, at least. And that's, I mean, because you think about it, before we get it, the writers have to get it. Before the writers get it, the translators have to get it. Before the translators get it, the acquisition department has to get it. And before acquisition gets it, you know, it's people that, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And that's just before it hits us. And then after us, it's the line producer, then the mix engineer, then the other side of the building, quality control. Yeah, then the art department, and all that stuff. So, yeah, I would say at least 20 people, and that's just departments, I would say. But, yeah, there are a lot of people that touch it. So sometimes you can get kind of protective about a show and then forget that you're only one part of the team of that show.
So, yeah. Wow. Like, I never would have thought that so many people were involved.
Oh, yeah. And these people, just like us, they're very much, especially anyone that has to directly involve themselves with it, well, which is everybody, they fall in love with the show, too. The brand managers, you know, like Char and Curtis, Lance, all that stuff. It's great. And you can also tell, it's nice to hear when a mix engineer likes the show and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I actually have a question for the both of you. Which do you prefer, working behind the scenes, like we talked about, or working behind the mic, if you had to choose?
I ask myself this question all the time, and I've never really been able to come up with a very convincing answer. I really enjoy both. To be honest with you, I think they both have their own strengths and weaknesses and their own sort of list of pros and cons. But I think that what I do behind the scenes benefits a great deal from being involved in front of the mic. Whereas, you know, getting the voice acting side of things benefits a great deal from seeing what goes on behind the scenes. So as I started doing both, I realized that they inform each other so much, that, and I've grown so much in every respect, that I really can't think about them as separate entities anymore. To me, it's all kind of one big bag of tricks that I just love to dig into at any given time and do whatever. I mean, I enjoy every aspect of it, and because I do, I think they inform each other the way they do. As Terry says, though, you have so many people working on the show that it's always a huge collaboration. And I like being part of that collaboration at any stage, or as many stages as possible, because it's really a lot of fun. So I don't know that I don't prefer one over the other anymore. I really like them all equally, and I consider them to be, it's a perfect synthesis of what I love about the business. Getting to do all of it really gives you the tools to be good at all of it. So, that's kind of in a nutshell what I think about that.
They're all your children, and you love them all.
and I can agree with that. I mean, I started out doing voice acting, but really, I don't think I really... voice acting is one thing. Voiceover is one thing. Specifically, anime voice acting is a totally different beast. So starting out, it's kind of hard to watch Tsubasa or any of my early stuff because I really was thinking too much about it as an actor and not remembering, you know, that these are pre-existing characters, and just to honor that and put your own spin on it. So I think directing and falling in love with the show that way made me a much better voice actor. So it is that kind of like little bit of this, little bit of that. And, you know, then adaptive script writing, you know, you're like, oh my God, you guys are really patient. I'd say, you know, gun to my head, if I had to choose one, I'd probably bore the crap out of the person holding the gun and be like, well, like, here, like, think about it this way. I'm like, oh. Yeah, I'll agree with Tatum on that.
Very politically correct. I like it.
So, we just have one more question, and we wanted to save it for last. It sounds like you guys really love a lot of the animes that you work on, and I know it's going to be another really hard question for you, but
it's standard, we have to ask.
and you might see it coming, but the question is, if either of you have a favorite anime that you've worked on, or perhaps favorite roles that you've played during your careers.
I'll speak to that first and give Terry time to formulate an answer. I get asked this a lot, so I'm prepared. As far as favorite voice acting roles, I really don't have a favorite. And that, I feel, is my obligation as an actor to really believe in whatever I happen to be doing. So if I'm there for an hour to do Soldier A in some little anime that I otherwise have no other involvement in, it's my job to find that, for that to be my favorite role. I want to give it my all. It's kind of, you know, that's just my work ethic. But, I mean, I do have, you know, characters that I really enjoy playing, and I like to go back and watching more than others. But I never like to pick one because it really does depend on the mood I'm in. Certain characters I've played speak more to me in certain times than others. So I find something to like in all of them. And that's true of my approach to any role I've played or anything I've written or anything I've directed, is that I feel that if I'm not enjoying myself, ultimately a failure to enjoy myself at what I'm doing would be kind of a failure of imagination, because it's my responsibility to sort of bring my passion to whatever I'm doing, because life is just too short otherwise. But if I had to pick a favorite project I've ever worked on as a director, and this, again, I do have an answer for this, but it's not an easy one.
My favorite project I've ever worked on as a director would have to be Romeo x Juliet, because there's just a lot of reasons. I had a really stellar cast who were just amazing to work with.
It is
a brilliant show. It was an honor to get to work on, and I was really chomping at the bit to get to do it for a good year before it actually came down the wire for me. But, you know, getting to co-direct with a personal hero of mine, Bruce Elliott, who was one of the first actors I ever worked with, as a burgeoning voice actor myself, it was just great. And those scripts that Taliesin Jaffe and his team of writers did for us were just absolutely amazing. Some of the best, if not the best, scripts I have ever seen in any genre, anywhere, whether it be anime or dub acting or whatever. They were just really, really incredible, and they brought so much to the table that it brought up. I think it brought out the best performances in just about everyone involved with that show as an actor. So that's one of those shows that, as much fun as I've had doing other things like Aquarion and Juose and, of course, Rin, Daughters of the Mafane, which will always have a special place in my heart, not just because of, you know, the sex scenes you got to do, Terry, but, you know, Romeo and Juliet is, I think, of the things I've worked on to date, the single project that I wish I could wake up every day of my life and be working on, because it was just a dream project. We all became one big, happy family, and it was really hard to let go of it. And unfortunately, not the sort of show that gets a sequel, because it kind of has a very definite end. I know, right? But that definitely is my favorite thing I've ever gotten to say.
Very cool. I can see why. It was just fabulous to watch. I can only imagine what the process was.
It was pretty cool to watch as an intern too, because you could tell he loved it. But the Annie Chapman and Romeo x Juliet. I had one line. How dare you? And I just got the flat brain of Valencia. Now, acting-wise, I'm still, I guess Tatum and I are a little, like, different in one way, like, where I've directed more than I've voice-acted. I do enjoy doing the characters that I've done, but not many, I haven't done that many, well, that I can talk about yet. I'm a little newer than Tatum. I'm a little bit of a baby. I'd say so far the one that I can talk about would probably be Kamika Todoroki in Shikabane Hime, or Corpse Princess, because I got to work with Kent Williams as, you know, my monk, my contracted monk, and Kent kept, I mean, he always just made it very fun, and I'm totally in love with Kent Williams, by the way. He's fantastic, and he always used to call me Kamika to pick me off. And I get to call me Kamika, and he's like, whatever, Kamika girl, and stuff like that. But that was my first show, really kind of like my first show to take from the beginning. Arbus Elliott and I, again, I worked with Arbus Elliott too. We did the casting for it, so even though he directed the first four episodes, we were both very heavily involved with the casting process. But, I mean, so that's also directing. But favorite show directing, Wynn is great because not a lot of people, have their reservations about the risqueness. Not that, you know, anyone but Tatum was ever asked to do it, but Tatum was also recording Spice and Wolf at the time, and he knew that I had already watched the show. I mean, when I auditioned for a show, I kind of researched the crap out of it anyway. Most of the time, I try not to do that now because it takes way too much time, but Wynn is a 6-episode, you know, arc, so it's pretty easy to watch, and also the animation is very different. And it tells a different story. It takes a lot of risks. And that's what I really like about Rin. Big Wind Up will always have a big special place in my heart because it was my first show. I interned on it. Bevan's actually let me help cast it as an intern, or at least he lets me think I did. Rin, Big Wind Up, and Corpse Princess were when I was still working under Christopher Bevins. I took a bit of a break, and now I'm working occasionally with Mike McFarland, who was already a friend before he was my boss, which is always weird. But I've done Rideback and Baca and Tess, Some of the Beasts, under Mike McFarland, and Mike taught me a lot of things. You know, you think you're done, you're never done. And Rideback, the reason that Tia Ballard and I became such good friends, because I kind of had to be her friend after that, because I really pushed her on that, and in order to get that way, I had to get very close to her, and I love Tia Ballard. And it was my first real chance working with Nishimura and Micah Solusad. Well, I'd worked with Mike. But I love all my shows, I guess. But, And any other show that just any of our coworkers do, you can always tell when someone's loved what they've done. So it's really hard for us to pick. It's really hard for us to pick.
No, we figure it's always hard to pick. I mean, I'm glad that you guys gave us something, though. Most people are just like, no, I can't.
It would be a hard question for us, and we're not even making them.
Yeah, we're just watching them and enjoying them.
Yeah,
well, speaking of which, though, I actually have one thing, which is almost entirely off the record. So I just wanted to say that Big Windup is one of my favorite shows of all time. And since you both are here, I figured you should know. And off the record, like I said, what would have to happen for season 2 to be dubbed?
I've gotten this question before. And the unfortunate thing is that anime, specifically in America, the brand managers do everything that they can to get the name out there. But unfortunately, an anime, or let's just say a cartoon about baseball that runs up speed of a baseball game, was not appealing to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And I'll disagree with that, but of course, biased opinion here. Shawn Michael Teague did an amazing job as Rinmin Naki, and I would absolutely die if he got the chance to reprise his role. It just did not sell well, so I really don't know what would need to be done. That's really, because so many hands are in the cookie jar, that's really a question probably for the brand manager, but we'd probably give you about the same answer. Is it just didn't sell that well for them to invest in the second season.
Yeah, so, I figured as much. I mean, I heard about all of that, but I figured it was worth asking anyway.
Oh, yeah. No, and, it breaks my heart because, that's a really big, really great show. And the ensemble cast, because, like say, Shawn Michael Teague, he is the lead, but, Greg Ayers, Christopher
Everyone
Ed,
was just fantastic.
Everyone. Cynthia Kranz got to be crazy, and that's why she's called Crazy Kranz now. But, Momo is hilarious, so, But if we ever got the chance to do it again, I'd jump on that in a minute. But, unfortunately, it did make me sad when I heard that the sales didn't do that well. But, we had fun doing it, so.
But that's all that matters.
Poor Kimiko, her heart's broken.
It is.
Oh, no.
It is. I know I'm not alone in saying that I would literally, die to see the second season dubbed, because it was just so brilliantly done. I mean, but anyway, that was my two cents.
Don't die.
I would die of happiness. It's a good way to die. But yeah, so that was my two cents. So I'm good.
Well, thank you both for joining us this evening. It was definitely a lot of fun. Always nice to have an insightful voice to learn from. So
I'm sorry we couldn't provide that for you. maybe next time.
Most definitely, we'll hold you to that.
Anyway, do you guys want to say one more word about your podcast or anything else before we part ways and say goodbye?
That anime show, I don't know why I suddenly got my Philadelphia accent. That anime show. I usually try to hide it very well. Voice actor, but let me see. That anime show will be coming back on June 11th. Well, we'll be recording on June 11th with Robert McCullum.
Exciting.
Yes, he's a blast. I can't wait to have him on the show. Uncensored. And then we should be announcing our guest for July. I've already got them booked, but it's a returning guest. And so keep you can look for any updates on the Facebook page or thatanimeshow.com. And let me see. Dance in the Vampire Bund, which I didn't talk about, shockingly, because I'm one of the few actors that actually did release my name on that. But Dance in the Vampire Bund will be coming out June 14th. Ride Back will be coming out June 28th. And Baka and Tet should be coming out July 12th or 14th, I believe.
It's a busy summer.
Excited for that.
Yes. Yeah, please look out for those. And, you know, Tatum will be... He's doing a lot of cons this summer, so...
A lot of conventions. I don't even remember what I'm doing now. Yeah, a lot of stuff. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. I have nothing to add to that, because I can't keep track of this stuff.
That's why you have me.
Well,
but, no, again, thanks for having us on the show and being really patient about our schedules and all that stuff. We are fans of the show, and thanks for inviting us on. It's really fun.
No, the pleasure was all ours. And,
seriously,
yeah,
thank you.
Thank you for joining us. It's I'm sure that everybody who's listening is really enjoyed it, and they better go check out that anime show.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there'll be consequences.
Yeah, I'll capture tonight, yeah.
I don't know what the consequences will be. But,
we'll figure something out.
All right.
Well, thanks for having us on, guys. You do very good work.
Well, that was the interview with Terry and Tatum. They were really good guests. They were, I really enjoyed talking to them. It was, I know that Kimiko did as well. Some of the shows that they've done are, ones that she's a huge fan of.
Yeah, she was very excited about getting to talk with those guys. I know that for a fact.
Especially Big Wind Up, which she just loves to death. And anyway, so thank you again to Terry and Tatum for joining us for that interview. We really enjoyed it, and hopefully we'll get to do something again with them sometime in the future. Okay, so for now, we're going to take a quick anime news break, and when we come back, we're going to review two anime, His and Her Circumstances and Cat Soup. So, stay tuned, and you're not going to want to miss this crazy Cat Soup.
Crazy. Chiaki, and this is your anime news break. First up, the zombie craze seems to have finally hit Japan, and it's doing it in the oddest way possible. Artist duo Mad Barbarians have designed the official Sanrio items for Hello Kitty, Mimi, Joey, Mori, Fifi, Tippy, and Tracy in zombie form. It's like an odd mix between ugly dolls and the bears with the blood coming off of their faces, but this is not your mother's Hello Kitty. The capsule toy maker Catan Club will be offering these Hello Kitty zombie friends mascots starting late September. Mad Barbarians, who are, like I said, the artist duo of Katsuya Saito and Mitsumi Ito, designed the official keychain mascots, which measure about 45 millimeters, which is about 1.8 inch, and feature the main characters. The mascots are going to be available in the random lots in the capsule toy vending machines, which is where you put in the money and you crank it and it comes out, for 300 yen, which is about US 370. They haven't said if it's going to be a permanent feature or something that's just temporary, so if you're a huge Hello Kitty fan, I highly recommend starting September. You keep an eye out on the web for these to collect them while you can. In other anime apparel news, Gintama sneakers are to be sold in Japan starting August 11th. The character goods maker Movic has recently announced that they're going to be selling the sneakers based off of Gintama's lead character, Gintoki Sakata, in the stylish design, being sold at around 6,980 yen, which is about $86.60 in US.
The shoes are going to arrive in small, which is 9 inches or 23 centimeters, and medium sizes, which is 9.6 inches, not really that much larger, or 24.5 centimeters, both in Animate stores nationwide and the Animate online shop. So if you're interested in the shoes and have small enough feet to fit them, I highly recommend starting to check out the Animate online shop around August 11th. Well, this might just be the news about anime apparel, because there's just some wacky things that are starting to come out of Japan. First, zombie Hello Kitty, Gintama sneakers, and now a Lelouch Yagami mask. Yes, it is an eye mask, not a complete mask of his face, but just an eye mask, like the kind that you see on airplanes to block out the light, that kind of eye mask, with Lelouch's eyes from Code Geass. It's gonna arrive also early in August. Again, this seems to be the fall of the anime apparel, but it's going to be sold for the cheap price of about 1,200 yen, which is about $15. It's a cotton urethane mask, which features the Gia symbol in the left eye, and it makes it look like your eyes are open with anime eyes when you're sleeping. So it's a pretty cool mask. I recommend checking out pictures. We'll post them on our site with the episode. But it's definitely something that I'm halfway tempted to take on my next plane trip with me, because it will be something that gets noticed. This was Chiaki. This was your Anime News Break. We'll be back to the show soon, so stay tuned.
In the summer of 2008, a man named Fightbait started an anime podcast.
I watched Grenadier because of the tits.
And it was terrible. 2 years later...
Maybe his penis is the duck.
I don't know how you would put that in a woman.
Fightbait.com may still suck ass, but we're bringing you more content than ever. If you head over to the website, you can now find news, reviews, editorials, pictures of dogs, and more crappy podcasts than your ears can handle. You even have the option to subscribe to the podcast, the blog, or both. Fightbait.com, kicking ass on the internet for 2 years and counting, proving that quantity is better than quality.
Hi, I'm J. Michael Tatum. I play Sebastian in Black Butler, and I'm a total anime addict.
And we're back.
We are back indeed.
Yes, we are. We can talk. And we're here.
We can talk and things and such.
No Christopher Walken tonight. Can't handle that.
Wasn't that Shatner? Was it going for Shatner or Christopher?
I don't know.
I think that
either
was...
way, either way, it was bad. And let's never have that again.
Aww.
Anyway, so, we have two reviews tonight. Would you like to go first, or would you like me to go first?
I'll go first, because mine won't be too long, considering I don't have that much to work with.
It was only, like, what, 30 minutes long? All right, so you go ahead and do your cat soup.
Cat soup. So the anime I'm reviewing is Cat Soup, of course. And it was requested, I don't know, a scary long time ago by Lelouch Yagami. But proof, we are working through it. We are slowly getting through it. Alternately, it can also be called Neko Jūrusō. It was released back in 2001, and it is a 34-minute OVA. And the basic premise of the story is a cat, who is a younger brother of this cat family. Everyone, there's no people, everyone's just cats.
Uh-huh.
And they walk on 2 feet, and they act like people. They're just cats instead of people.
Very, very anthropomorphic.
Ooh, 25-cent word there.
Very nice, thank you. I appreciate that.
So a cat is trying to save his elder sister from death, and, like, the Grim Reaper comes to, like, she's sick, and the Grim Reaper comes to take her away, and he runs after her, and he tries to get her back from the Grim Reaper, but when he does this, her soul is ripped into two pieces. Like, the Grim Reaper takes one, and he takes one.
That sucks.
And...
Do cats have souls?
Not according to the Catholics. But let's not get into that.
Wow, that's a discussion for another time. Somebody please call PETA.
But so the next day when she's declared dead, he returns her soul to her and she comes back to life. But because she only has half of her soul, she's kind of in like this, you know, zombie dreamlike state.
Where she's a little left up.
Well, she's just like a blob. She just has no emotion kind of deal. And he sets out on a journey through, like, the other world or the dreamscape.
She's like a zombie?
Not 100% a zombie. Well, I guess she comes back from the dead, so you could say she's a zombie, but she's not, like, an eating your brains type of
zombie. Quick, it's a zombie!
He then embarks on a journey to return his sister to her former self, and this is through, like, the other world and whatnot. So, okay. That's the general premise of the series. And I'm just, you know what, I'm just gonna say it on this one. Cat Soup is one of those anime that has, no one has any idea what's going on. But it's like, smart people watch this show, and they go, there's a lot of symbolism, and there's a lot of stuff going on here, presented in ways that are both surreal and beautiful and psychological.
Really? Is that really what happens?
Yes. And they sit there and they go, this seems intelligent. And I am an intelligent person, but I don't understand what's going on. So rather than saying the anime really doesn't have that much going on other than that basic plot, people are like, oh, it is surreal and it is deep. And I actually ended up reading a lot of reviews on this after I watched it because I was like, what? And it's just like people praise it for being so deep and surreal, but the thing is that it's just random scenes thrown together. They're beautiful. They're really well done.
Really? You told me that it looked like it was like an animation project from a college student.
No, I said it looked like an animation project in the sense of some professor had been like, okay, I want you to have animation that does this, and I want you to have animation in this style, and I want you to use this technique. So it was all very well done, but it was like a hodgepodge of different things. Like, there was a part that was like still images, there were a part that were done with like crayons, there was a part that was forward and then in reverse. It was a lot of different. I mean, there was a part that had a lot of sweeping perspective, so it just seemed like a lot of techniques.
Sweeping.
It just seemed like there was a lot of techniques that were put together all in one. And it's not that any of it was done badly, but it was just kind of, it didn't seem to have anything really stringing it together other than it being in a dream world. And it was scenes that you could tell were trying to evoke something. It had, like, an atomic bomb blowing up, a pig eating itself, prisoners of war being shot in the back of the head.
Like a pig eating it, like, gnawing on its feet and stuff?
No, like a pig, like, unzipping itself and, like, taking out its innards and putting it on a skillet.
What the hell?
Like, and, like, scenes of, like, corpse, like drawn, like, animals with their stuff cut out. I mean,
you're gonna have nightmares.
It was weird stuff. And normally I'm into that kind of thing, but it seemed like it was trying to invoke emotion for the sake of evoking emotion, and not for any purpose of the story. Like, all of these scenes just kind of happened around the main character, and what ultimately brought his sister back didn't really have anything to do with anything.
Shy Guy X57 from the chat wants to know if bacon came out of the pig.
Yes, it was like ham, like ham bacony slices.
Canadian bacon?
Could say it was Canadian bacon.
For all of you Canadians in the chat, Canadian bacon is not bacon. Just as a side.
But so I mean, all things considered, I just think it was a series of things where someone was trying very hard to like have this like deep and engaging story, but they did it in such a way that just didn't work out. I mean, it was. It had no attachment, and that's the thing. It had no attachment to the story it was trying to portray. So for a lot of it, it didn't work out well. But I can praise it for a few things. A few things save this.
Oh, pray tell.
One, it did have a distinct beginning, middle, and end.
Oh my god.
There was a start, there was a problem, there was a protagonist, there was a climax, and then there was an ultimate end or solution to that problem.
You said climax.
But, I mean, so that's a lot, because some anime don't have that in 12 episodes. So it's the bones of something. And it also lacks dialogue, but still gets the story across, which is also impressive because you have to have decent storytelling. But most of the storytelling is done in, like, the first 7 minutes and then, like, the last two. Other than that, it's just random scenes that are thrown together that just don't seem to make sense.
So, we all know that the OVA Kigeki comedy is godly.
Yes.
It's godlike.
Yeah.
So that is only 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it has a beginning, a climax, and an end also.
Yeah.
How does Cat Soup stack up against comedy? Is it just like utter shit? Or is it actually hold its own in some regards?
I would not call it other shit because like I said, it is kind of beautiful and it is interesting in a surreal way, but I feel like it has filler. For a 30-minute anime, I felt like it had filler. It could have been 10.
Wow. 30-minute anime with filler?
I felt like a lot of the Dreamscape images were just filler. Like I said, a school project where they were like, oh, now I have to have a scene that does this to get an A. So...
You must have 30 minutes.
But I only have 10 minutes of content.
I don't give a shit. Have sweeping BS for 20 minutes of the show.
It's kind of what it felt like. So I looked into the director. It was directed by Tatsuyo Sato, which really I couldn't find anything other than he was the series director of Ninja Scroll.
Wow, that's random.
Which was random and could explain a lot of this series.
So is Cat Soup pretty old then?
No, it's 2001.
Well, that's 10 years old.
Yeah, I keep forgetting. But overall, the series isn't a total waste of your life, given that it's only 30 minutes. You can find it on YouTube. The one I found on YouTube had Spanish for like the few speech bubbles there were, because like I said, there's no talking, it's just speech bubbles. But if you know basic Japanese, you can figure it out. And even if you don't, you can figure it out. So if you want to watch it, it's only 30 minutes. It's not going to be a total waste of your life. But I probably, if it was in a bargain bin, I probably wouldn't buy it. So...
How cheap would it have to be?
I'd buy it for like $5.
You would buy a 30-minute anime, of which 10 minutes is filler, for $5.
Yeah.
Wow. That sounds
cheap
like
for an anime.
That sounds like a waste. Well, sounds like a waste to me, but whatever.
Well, I don't know. So overall, I'm going to give this 2 random appearances of an elephant out of 5.
Wow, you really hated it.
Hey, I didn't hate it that much. I could have given it a 1.
I thought for sure it was going to get like at least a 2.5.
No, I couldn't give it a 2.5. I don't know. A lot of people really like this. Like I said, I looked at reviews and it was getting like 4 out of 5, 5.5 out of 5, a psychological, beautiful dreamscape of life and death. And I'm just like,
Maybe, how about I call bullshit? It's just a random hodgepodge of crap happening.
That's what I said. Yeah, that's my story. I'm sticking to it. If you don't like it, comment on our posty thing on our website.
Posty thing, nice.
Posty thing, yes. There's a post for it with the written review.
Great. Is it my turn?
It is your turn.
Yay! It's time for me to review a Gainax anime. And for those of you that know, I feel like I need to have like an intro theme song every time I review Gainax. It could be like a random collection of metal ripping and women screaming and buildings on fire.
Yeah.
Somebody please make this soundboard file for me. I would love it. Anyway, I'm going to review Karikano, which in English is known as His and Her Circumstances. And then it's got like 1,000 other alternate titles for every language you could think of.
Yeah.
Apparently this anime has made it to many, many markets. But His and Her Circumstances is a Gainax anime. It was directed by... a man named Hideaki Anno, who has done a lot of other Gainax stuff. Namely, he's done various he's had various involvements with Evangelion, Gunbuster, etc. So he's a Gainax director, and the anime came out. It's fairly old now. I mean, we're talking 1998. So believe it or not, that's 15 years old. I mean, people that were born in that year can almost smoke cigarettes. I mean, they're getting their driver's permits.
Oh my god, I'm so old, Mitsugi. When did this happen?
I'm a lot older than you.
I know, you're the old grumpy old man of the show, but I'm getting old. Am I going to have to become a grumpy old woman?
That makes you an old maid.
Oh, okay.
And of course, if you're an old maid, nobody wants you. Don't forget that. You're the old maid if you're old. Anyway, so, sorry. I'm getting off track. Yukino Miyazawa is the main character of the show, and she's this girl character who, she's very vain, and by that I mean that she kind of follows the typical Japanese culture of having your indoor face and your outdoor face, and by that I mean that the way that she acts at home is completely different than the way that she is at school, She studies her ass off, like 4 hours a night. She does everything she can to be like the most ideal model student in the whole school. And as a result, she basically has like fan clubs, people swooning over her. Because she's pretty, and she's of course number one in the class. She's like the president, everyone loves her. It's almost cliche how much they love her, right?
Right.
And so a boy comes to the school named Arima, and he's even better than her, right? And she hates him immediately, because he's taken her thunder from her. And that just can't happen.
Well, I mean, after working your butt off, it'd be frustrating.
So, what happens is, one day, Arima goes to Miyazawa's house, and he's returning something to her, I think, if I remember correctly. And basically, she opens up the door and, like, flies into him because they're wrestling or something, and it totally blows her cover. It reveals the fact that she's not really what she appears to be, that she's basically a phony. And, of course, Arima's shocked because they're, like, rivals in school. And what he does is he uses it against her as blackmail. You know, he'll be like, do my homework, or, you know, after school, because they're always staying after school to take care of, like, club stuff and whatever.
Yeah.
So he'll be like, do my homework, or, you know, I'll reveal your secret. You know, he basically is abusing it. And but what you find out is that Arima is not exactly all that he appears to be either. And through a series of events, he ends up revealing himself to Miyazawa, and the two fall in love. And that's not really much of a spoiler, because it happens very soon. It's like, we're talking like first three episodes of a 26-episode series.
Dang.
Now, before I continue on with the plot a little bit more, I want to make a couple general comments about the show. This show does a fantastic job of giving insight into the personalities and the mindset of the characters. I find that anime nowadays in the present doesn't really pay close attention to what the characters are thinking and their motivations behind doing things, not the way that this anime does. There's so much monologue in this show, and also they throw a lot of text up on screen, almost comic book-ish at times, that is positive and negative in the sense that you're getting a lot of information about the characters, and you're loving them, and they're growing in your heart and your mind as a result. But I almost recommend that people watch this anime dubbed, because it's really, really hard to keep up with all this fast-moving subtitle text while reading all the on-screen text at the same time, and you miss out on a lot.
It sounds like the kind of anime where you have to pause it, at least if you're doing it subtitled, pause it to, like, get through everything.
Yeah, I mean, I could honestly see somebody having to pause, because I'm not talking, like, comic books where it's like, ha ha ha, and things like that. There'll be, like, whole small paragraphs, like, on the sides of the screen.
Dang.
And some of the things they say are important, and you miss out if you don't read them. So, I almost recommend it dubbed, but in that sense, you get a lot of feedback into the characters, and I really appreciated the show for that. I also appreciated the show because, unlike a lot of Japanese shows where, I think Love Hina, for some reason, Love Hina is just the quintessential cliche when it comes to this kind of type of thing for me. Because in Love Hina, you have two characters that obviously like each other. They never get around to it, ever. And every time they're about to and they're getting ready to kiss, some stupid girl comes in and, like, knocks somebody over and disrupts things. And I asked you earlier if Kimi ni Todoke suffered from the same thing. And you said largely no.
No, yeah.
But at the same time, unlike Kimi ni Todoke, in Karikano, they're, like, kissing and have, like, a serious relationship running by episode 5 or 6. And it's kind of refreshing. Think Paradise Kiss. Maybe not quite that extreme, because we're not having, like, sex here. But, you know, Paradise Kiss, I know that you know, as you're a fan of it, that the relationships in that show were very serious.
Well, yeah, they get to the point rather quickly.
And so does His and Her Circumstances. They don't quite take it to that degree, but at the same time, you know, they spend the whole first half of the show being in love, kissing, going on a date or two, and also defending their relationship from their parents and their teachers.
See, I have a question.
What?
Are you familiar with the Jane Austen book Pride and Prejudice?
Not really, but you can ask the question anyway.
Okay. See, what you're saying to me, it almost sounds like an anime Japan version of the Pride and Prejudice story.
In that
you have a guy, I don't know how to explain this without going too much into the book Pride and Prejudice, but you have the guy who's nobility, and everyone thinks it's going to be, you know, his prejudice because against the girl who's not nobility that they kind of fall in love with, and it's going to be, you know, her pride or whatever. But it ends up being swapped because he's actually very prideful, and she's prejudiced against him for being, like, very royal, and no one wants them to be together, but they end up being together because it's like this true love thing that just spawns between them, and they, you know, kind of go about and do it no matter what anyone else says.
So are you asking me if they're, like, judgmental towards each other?
No, I'm just kind of asking, is it the same kind of, could it be interpreted as an anime version of the book Pride and Prejudice, like an adaptation of that kind of story?
Well, I mean, you can make that judgment for yourself, because without having read the book, I'm not really sure. But I will say that they're more like a super couple, that they fall in love because they're very similar.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wonderful scene in the beginning where Miyazawa just can't take it anymore, you know, being blackmailed by him, and she runs away crying, and he actually likes her, so he's chasing her down the hallway of the school, right?
Right.
And they stop, and she turns and jumps out of one of the first story windows of the school. Just like, it's 5 feet off the ground. Oh. Big whoop. 2 feet off the ground, whatever. And she jumps out, and they're like on the track or something, but out by the, you know, baseball field or whatever. And he jumps out after her, and he ends up like accidentally like tripping and tackling her from behind. So they have this moment where she, you know, is frustrated, and she's crying, and she just, like, bursts forth and spills her guts about everything that she's pissed off because he's been blackmailing her, and yes, she's a phony, and yes, you know, but she still wants him to like her because, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And she really shows herself completely in that moment, and it's a huge moment in the show because, as I was saying, she's a very prideful character, and so this is, like, a big step for her. Mm-hmm. To divulge herself fully, and because she does that and she divulges herself to him, you know, they fall in love. It's just a big, I'm sure you can see what I'm saying.
I really think it's like an adaptation.
You think
of
it's similar?
I really,
well,
talk to me on the forum, people, those who have read the book and have seen this anime.
I will go further. They end up having to defend their relationship against a lot of the teachers in the school and against their parents. I recall Miyazawa's grade slipping a lot because now that she still upholds the facade a little bit with the classmates, but it's gotten really lax because at least one person knows that that it's fake.
Yeah.
So her grades start to slip because she's just not killing herself every day like she used to. Because she's not naturally a genius or whatever. So people are against the relationship and they're defending it. But the problem with the show is, I know the show sounds great right now, and I will tell you that up through episode 10 or 11, this is one of the best shows you can watch. I mean, the first half of the show is genius in every regard. If I was reviewing just the first half of the show, I wouldn't even have to consider it. It gets a 5. It's not even worth thinking about.
Wow.
The second half of the show is horrible.
Oh, no.
It's typical Gainax, and this is maybe Gainax's worst example of really botching a show up.
Aww.
You'll have, I think, throughout the second 12 episodes or so of the show, you'll have something like 3.5 recap episodes. I mean, I'm not joking. You'll have, like, episode 14, full recap of the first 13 episodes, and that's it. And then there'll be, like, episode 16. The first whole half is another recap. It's, like, absolutely embarrassing. Episode 20 is a recap of 13 through 19.
See, I was gonna say, I can maybe tolerate, like, a half recap, like, halfway through the series. Because I have known some 24-episode series that do that around 13, 14, but
it's horribly disappointing. You know, the whole show from like episode 10 on or so is about them dealing with the obstacles that they have in their relationship. But that alone is fine. But three filler episodes, or 3.5. Or rather, 3.5 recap episodes, throw a filler episode in there, and then have the ending done in crayon, literally, again, on just like Evangelion, and you have a show that went from a 5. I mean, it's like take a first half's a 5, second half's a 1, and average them. What do you get? A 3. I'm gonna give the show 4, you know, struggling relationships out of 5.
That's still a pretty good score, though.
It's, I mean, so good. The first half, I'd give it like a 7 out of 5. It's that good. So if I give the first half a 7 out of 5 and the second half a 1 out of 5, it gets an average of a 4. So I would really recommend people watch the show. When you get to the first recap episode, stop watching it. That's all there is to it. Because you're just going to be disappointed from
there on. Will you feel satisfied, though, if you end there? Is it, like, enough of a conclusion?
Probably not. But, I mean, you just have to enjoy what it does for you in the beginning. And then just, I don't know, try to forgive it for its shortcomings. It's not the anime's fault. The Gainax can't budget their money. And so literally, like, I don't know, 4 of their 5 animes they made in the late 90s are finished in crayon and pencil. I don't know. I've said it before, but it's true. You've got Gunbuster, Evangelion.
Divebuster had the black and white slow moving panning images.
Nah, Gunbuster had like the ending that was like in black and white.
Oh really?
Yeah. But Exia from the chat says download the manga too. Anytime one of these animes has a horrible ending, you should pretty much always go get the manga.
Yeah.
I mean, Berserk had a horrible ending, but it was just because they dropped it in the middle of nowhere, you know, and the manga goes on for another, like, 5 million chapters. And it's the same way with a lot of shows like this. So if you need more, it's the same way with the 12 Kingdoms too. You know, they dropped that arc with Taiki. So, fill in the gaps in the manga. So watch the anime up until the first recap, and then go pick up the manga if you feel like you need more. But I'm gonna give the show a 4 out of 5.
Still pretty good.
It's a fantastic show, but it's just one of those shows that has some issues, much like Berserk, which apparently there's a sequel of coming out soon, or a movie or something.
Yay!
And they better not screw it up, or I'm gonna be so absolutely furious. We're gonna have like a whole episode devoted to hating the director in the studio that F's it up if they screw it up.
I'll just sit back and laugh on that one.
Yeah, well, you can. I'll just rant for like an hour. And Roko will be drunk. And that's how it'll work. He'll just swear, he'll just throw out like drunken profanity and talk about sausage.
Yes.
But
speaking of Roko and Kimiko, hopefully one of them will join us next week. We realize that they have not been on the last two episodes, but it's just because schedules have been crazy.
Yeah,
last week with the con, and then this week was just stuff happened. Kimiko had a friend's piano recital to go to.
It's a little tough during the summer when, you know, there's, you know, it's hard to connect when everybody's scattered throughout the United States.
Connect.
But that's it for the show tonight. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Terry and Tatum. Thank you to them again for joining us.
Thank you so much for joining us. We love to have guests like that.
And we're glad that we finally got to have you on the show, and hopefully we can do something together again in the future. We hope you enjoyed the reviews. Lulu Shigami finally got to Cat Soup, so. And I may do Azumanga next week.
Yeah, that was requested too.
But we were talking about doing like a Magical Girl episode next week, and so I may end up doing Nanoha.
That was requested as well.
So.
We have lots of requests right now.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you have 600 forum members.
Yeah.
Wanting you to review things. Anyway, so you can find us at www.aaapodcast.com. We're on iTunes. Please rate us if you like us. Write us a pretty review. We had a really funny review.
You want me to take care of the websites while you look
sure,
that up?
Sure.
All right. Facebook.com/AnimaticsAnonymousPodcast. Or you can just search aaapodcast.com. Also, our main site, aapodcast.com. We are on the aaanetwork.org. It is a great site with lots of cool podcasts from all realms of the geek realm. We have, like, Magic the Gathering and video games and stuff on there. So you can find your perfect podcast. That is a widget we have. And, of course, broadcasting live every Sunday night at 8 p.m. EST on ustream.tv/channel/anime-addicts-anonymous-podcast, where we have plenty of links to all of these things on our main site, so if you just go to aapodcast.com, you can find any of them. And thank you to those who joined us on the Ustream tonight. It was great to chat with you, and I think we're going to do a little Q&A after the episode by request, so stuff like this you can look forward to when you tune in live.
Yeah, the guy that wrote the funny review, his name was Kenneth Laddie Jr., really funny. He what made an analogy comparing us all to different stereotypical RPG characters.
That one's cute.
I almost want to read it, but it is pretty long.
I don't know. You can read it if you want. I don't care.
Well, I'm the giant sword wielding party leader who I don't have amnesia, but I wish I did because I'm jaded, and that's true. And Chiaki's the healer. Kimiko's the rogue, and Roko's the drunken tank who barrels through the podcast with lecherous perversity. If you go to the review section on iTunes for the podcast, you can actually read it. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, it is really funny.
Anyway, so closing you guys out tonight is the song. What is this song called?
Moso Shouju A, from the anime, Comfort for de Libre, by the artist Yui Hore.
Man, you know you're desperate when you're playing songs from Comfort.
New season starts soon. New music.
Have a good night, you guys. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining us. Have a good one.